It's 4:45. It's time for Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan with us in studio, bringing sunshine and delicious wine and fellowship. All of those things.
You're promising things that I'm not going to be able to deliver to people.
Don't believe it.
Promising sunshine in this midnight hour of 4:45.
Well, your own kind of sunshine.
Oh, thanks. Anybody who knows me knows that's nonsense, but you mean the wine. The wine is the sunshine. I brought a good wine today. I'm excited. It's a,
it's
a favorite of mine and kind of a fun, unique wine. So, for everybody keeping track, by the way, again, I must say over the Thanksgiving holiday, so many of you came up and said, you know, how much they enjoy this segment on downtown. And I said, oh, that's really nice. Do you enjoy the rest of downtown? They said, no, not really.
No, that was my family telling me.
It was really awkward. No, it's not true. And they said it's absolutely fantastic. And so thank you everybody for listening. It's really, really cool. That people are out there and learning, which is exactly why I'm here. So today we're back to learning about South America. We're going to sort of do a recap of South America, start with the last sort of major wine producing country that we haven't talked about, which is kind of weird for people because they don't still think about it very much, but that's Uruguay. We are also going to sort of touch on the rest of the continent. I hope everybody had a really good Thanksgiving. We certainly did and drank a lot of wine and I ate a lot of food. I ate more food than I normally eat during a holiday weekend. I just kind of constantly grazed. So I'm sure I'm pretty much back up to my fighting weight of around 200 pounds now, but that's okay. It's winter, so no one cares.
Right. And if you're going to fight, you want to be at that weight.
That's right. Well, I need extra cushion to take all the hits that I will because I move very slowly after I've eaten that much food. A lot of people don't think about Uruguay as a wine producing region. They probably don't think about it a lot at all. Anyway, it's kind of a tiny little country tucked there under Brazil. I suppose if you talk to the average person on the street, they really couldn't tell you much about it. So here's what I'll tell you about it. It is heavily populated with European immigrants. Who brought viticulture with them. And that turned out in really cool ways recently. But it wasn't, you know, as in much of South America's wine history that we've been talking about. It really wasn't formalized and modernized until pretty recently. It's South America's fourth largest producer, even though it's only the third country that we're talking about, because Brazil is South America's third largest producer, but not much comes out of Brazil. Brazil's wine is actually interestingly centered mostly around their centers of population, which in Brazil is areas that are very hot, very humid, so not really good vine land. So basically what they do, they have a lot of hybrid varietals, primarily a grape called Isabela, or Isabel in some other places. But these are grapes that are very resistant to rot and mildew and therefore do very well in these sort of odd climate conditions that you normally wouldn't find serious grape growing in. There is a little serious investment now in Brazil, but that's still ways away before that pays any sort of serious dividends. So Uruguay is the fourth largest producer, but the third probably most important and the second largest consumer in South America of wine. Why? Because again, there's a lot of European immigrants there and there's some pretty decent, serious wine being made there. The modern era began in the 1870s with Basque and Italian immigrants primarily. They brought clippings from their homelands, which is very evident in the wine that we're going to drink today. They were fleeing phylloxera and other, problems, just like all the other immigrants that have settled in all the other countries that we've been talking about in the New World. They were trying to find places where they could be more successful and grow their wine. I mean, people liked wine, and all of a sudden, 99% of the vineyards in Europe were gone. The Basque immigrants brought what's probably Uruguay's most important grape, which is the Tanat grape, originally called Arig, But eventually it did succumb to phylloxera, eventually made its way to Uruguay, and the original clippings of Jarigue have mostly passed on, and they've been replanted with new clippings of Tanat from Europe. Tanat's a really interesting grape because it is one of very few that actually has red flesh and red juice. Most grapes, if you cut them open, you squeeze them, the juice will be clear, which is how we have Blanc de Noir wines, right? White from dark. In this case, if you squeeze the Tanat grape, you will get a red juice, and the pulp and the flesh is red. That makes for very, very, you know, deep, rich colored wines, because there's no possibility of you know, removing the juice from the color, the pigments there. So they make beautifully very expressive wines. Now, the Basque versions of these wines are a little tough to take. They can be kind of barnyardy. But in Uruguay, like Malbec in Argentina, the Tanat grape has really found a home that it's has softened the grape. It's brought out a lot. It's just a very different expression of the grape, and it's a much more appealing expression of the grape, and one that we can all kind of get behind. And so you get a lot of, you know, rich, dark berry, mocha, chocolate notes. And the wine we're drinking today is from a producer called Viñedo de los Vientos, so wine from the winds. It's a wine for Americans that like their reds kind of chewy and bold and but very elegant and dignified. He also makes a really, really cool dessert wine out of this, which we also carry at the shop, which is like drinking, you know, raspberry German chocolate cake or something like that. It's it's stunningly good, and it's like 30-some bucks. So, I mean, if you are looking for a nice dessert wine for the holiday season, it is perfect. So check that one out. Other things you're finding in Uruguay before I move on. You're finding a lot of other really cool blends in European grapes that you just don't see anywhere else. Things like Albariño, which you find in, you know, northwestern Spain. You find Trebbiano, which you find in Italy. Again, because these immigrants kind of came from everywhere and brought everything and then just stuck the clippings in the ground and saw what happens. And you get some really, really neat stuff. And so it's not super easy to find things from Uruguay right now, but ask your wine merchant. There's stuff, you know, filtering in all the time, and I think you might like it. They're really neat. Really quickly, we touched on Brazil. The rest of South America that can grow grapes, right? Because a lot of it is so near the equator, it's just too darn hot. But there are some efforts in Bolivia, interestingly enough. So high up in the Andes Mountains, they're actually technically the world's highest vineyards in altitude, even though they're still quite damp, which is a problem. They still get considerable rainfall because of where they are. They're on the eastern side of the Andes. And then also Peru is seeing some international interest and promise, including from some famous Bordelais investors, but not much to speak of yet. So we'll see kind of where that goes. So just as we finish up, just a reminder, you know, that much of South America's serious wine regions, again, all immigrants, mostly in the 1800s, fleeing a lot of the problems that we continually have talked about in the wine world, predominantly the phylloxera louse and the decimation of the European vineyard. So just understand that their wine history dates from that, and they were planting for a long time whatever would grow so that they could have their booze, which is understandable. But just understand that their wine culture is a little farther behind, but it's got a lot of generations behind it. There's the wine we're drinking today, third generation winemaker. So you're getting some history now. Did want to mention before we are all done, we have a couple events coming up in December that I would love to see you all at the shop for. We have on December 14th, we have the Women in Wine shopping edition. So we're going to have, lots of things. We're going to have LuLaRoe. We're going to have
Plunder Jewelry.
We're going to have the Mindful Goddess. I don't know. I'll get the complete list. I'm a dude. I'm sorry. I can't remember these things.
Well, don't apologize for
okay.
that.
No. My wife is probably sitting somewhere in a car smacking herself in the forehead like, I set all this up. But it should be a lot of fun, and my wife and my manager are doing a great job setting it all up and getting a fantastic grouping. And then we have a wonderful guest pourer, Janine Werchniak from Latitude Wines. Those are the folks behind the 90 Plus wines. They've got a couple new projects out that are a little higher end, not grocery store stuff. Totally worth checking out. Really, really good. So that's on the 14th from 5 to 7. And our annual Ugly Holiday Sweater tasting, where we are not tasting ugly holiday sweaters. We're tasting good things and wearing ugly holiday sweaters and other assorted accessories with gifts and fun and things like that. That'll be on the 21st of December from 5 to 7. Hope to see you at both of those. And, yeah, happy holidays, everybody.
Fabulous. I'm liking Uruguay so much better now.
Well, we got to go.
Yeah,
it's absolutely. Right. It's right across from, you know, all the really hot spots.
We're almost there.
You know?
Yeah. Thanks, Eric.
Cheers.
Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, Hammond Street, Bangor, brings you Message in the Bottle.